Hello, hello. It's Thursday, the 2nd of May, which, can you believe it, is the same day the world first heard about the dreaded Loch Ness Monster. Way back in 1933, the Inverness Courier printed a couple stories about seeing the creature in the water and reported their claims that an enormous animal was seen rolling and plunging. And just like that, terrifying, in my personal opinion, media sensation was born. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Aaron, and this is What's Worth Talking About. We dig into the financial struggles of Kiwis doing it tough. Are more people spending their days worrying about money? How a popular international hotspot is cracking down on a dengue fever outbreak? The Kiwi peanut butter brand going to space? Yes, literally space. And Expelliarmus, the Harry Potter link to Britain's newly crowned biggest collector. All that coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
Whether it's pain at the till or pain at the pump, surviving financially is top of mind for so many Kiwis as we head into winter. In fact, latest Stats NZ figures show unemployment has risen to 4.3%. That's up from 4% in the previous quarter. And the Reserve Bank's latest financial stability report indicates that while the system is robust, some households are still doing it tough, reducing their spending or extending their repayment timelines in order to make ends meet. On top of that, a resilience index tracker by the Financial Services Council reveals the number of New Zealanders worrying about money, either daily, weekly or monthly, is the highest since 2020 at 70%, with 60% of renters who responded saying meeting their living expenses is currently somewhat or very difficult. To dig into what seems like a pile of financial stress, we're joined by the Council's Chief Executive Richard Clippin. Kia ora.
Kia ora, Aaron.
Richard, there's been so much talk from both sides of the political aisle about getting us out of this cost of living crisis. But have things really changed with the change of government, or are a good number of households still in crisis?
Look, I think the data from our financial resilience index, as you've said, we've tracked for the last 5 years, is showing signs of stress in the system. 70%, as you said, of Kiwis are worrying about money daily, weekly or monthly. What they're most concerned about is high inflation, high interest rates and high cost of housing. So it really is biting, but it's not new. We've been building into this point, and the data from the RBNZ and from Stats NZ around unemployment numbers kind of add to that picture of it's pretty difficult out there.
What's most worrying for you when you look at these numbers?
Look, I think the biggest concern is there's a very strong relationship between people's money lives and their general sense of well-being and health and so on. So that interconnectivity is really concerning when people are worrying and having sleepless nights, thinking, can I pay the bills, worrying whether they can do the things that they want to do for their kids and their families. So this translates from stats into kind of real life, and that's really concerning.
Yeah, talk me through that. I mean, how much of an impact does a number like 70% of New Zealanders are worrying about money, how much does that translate into real life, and what does that look like? What are some of the stories that you hear?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, if you bought property and you had an interest rate on your mortgage that had a 2 or a 3 in front of it 2 or 3 years ago, it's now got a 6 in the front of it. So you're paying, you know, almost double plus for your mortgage. That's real money going out the door, which means you're either having to work longer, make more money, or in actual fact, what's happening is you're trading off. You're making sacrifices about what you will and you won't spend your money on. So that impacts your lifestyle. It impacts what you can do with your kids. So those are some of the trade-offs. And you can see people are budgeting, tightening their belts about things that they will spend their money on and can spend their money on.
You mentioned mortgages there. Are renters some of the hardest hit?
Yeah, and of course, costs of rent have gone up as well because landlords have to meet their costs of higher interest rates and so on. And of course, as we know, our population size grew significantly in the last 12 to 18 months. So, there's greater competition for properties if you're renting as well. So, you know, this is a melting pot of big, gnarly issues that we're facing into at a macro level, but it does bite on Main Street.
Who else is struggling?
Yeah, so the data shows that younger New Zealanders, we call them generation renters, the under 40s, you know, came into COVID without the assets that their parents and grandparents may have had, into a world of great uncertainty without the cushion and without the rainy day funds. But, you know, with all difficult times, there's always, you know, winners and losers. So, you know, if you've got cash at the bank, if you are living on money that you've saved, you are getting interest on your bank accounts at around 6%, where a few years ago it was 0.5% or 0.75% and so on. So, you know, this is really experienced differently depending on your age, also depending on your demographics, and depending on how well you've bought and accumulated assets over your lifetime.
When you see numbers like this come through, 70% worrying about money, 60% of renters saying that meeting their living expenses is somewhat or very difficult, does that really concern you? And where do we go from here?
There's a conversation that we need to have nationally. You know, at the last election, discussions around helping New Zealanders with their financial capability, financial literacy, making good financial decisions is important. It starts around the dinner table. It starts at home. It happens at school. Getting good advice is a key part of this, and getting good advice from family members, advisors, and so on are equally important. It's about making do with what you've got. It's about saving for the rainy day. It's about prioritizing your spend. It might be deferring some spend that often we want to have it today. In tough times, actually, it might not be until tomorrow, next week, next month, or next year. And so I think the green shoots are around. This is unequally felt across the ages and stages across New Zealand. But equally, tough times give us an opportunity to rethink our habits, make different decisions, get good advice, get onto a path of good savings. But again, you know, we know it's really tough out there, and that's not always easy for everybody.
Financial Services Council Chief Executive Richard Clippin, thanks so much for jumping on.
Thanks so much, Aaron.
Hey, so if you love peanut butter like me, you're going to want to keep your ears peeled, because a batch of the good stuff made in our little patch of paradise, Aotearoa, New Zealand, is going stratospheric. You'll see a little later what I mean. And if you're enjoying what you're hearing, chuck us a like and a follow on your favourite podcast platform. It'll help other people find us. It's the time of year when New Zealanders turn their thoughts to a trip to somewhere warmer, possibly in the Pacific. But in Samoa, there were worries over an outbreak of dengue fever. There have been more than 200 cases confirmed of the mosquito spread virus since November last year, although it's thought many more will have been affected. But the country is springing into action with a national cleanup campaign to combat the buzzing nasties. And here to give us the latest is Professor Satu Viali, the Vice Chancellor of the Oceania University of Medicine in Samoa's capital, Apia. Satu, thank you so much for joining us. Talofa lava.
Talofa lava.
Now, 200 cases since November. I mean, that might not sound a lot to some Kiwis, but how serious is the situation on the ground over there?
Well, you know, it would be preferable if we don't have any. And if you talk about seriousness, it really depends on the number of people in your population. And so if you take Samoa's 200,000 people, and we already got 250 cases, then it's getting to be a serious issue. And so the fortunate thing about it is that it started last year. And so in some months, though it doesn't appear that it's many cases per month, but we are a small population. It is still serious. The virus is in here, and we need to make sure that nobody is desperately sick from it.
What does it actually look like on the ground? Does it mean more hospital admissions?
Well, none of the people that have presented to hospital, these are, by the way, hospital-tested people. I'm sure there's quite a few cases in the community, and that's those people are not very unwell. And as you know, it can vary from mildly unwell to severely unwell. And so most of the cases are still around the city. There's hardly anything on the other main island, Savai'i.
This national cleanup campaign, what does that actually mean in practice?
We're asking people to go and clean out where all the mosquitoes could live. You know, in tins where water is stagnated, make sure you get rid of those things. You know, several times you put some water for the plants and then they accumulate, and those are the water reservoir that the mosquito can grow in. And so those are all the things we ask the people to go and check. And then the government shut down its work last week, half a day, so that everybody can go home and clear the possibilities of the reservoirs for the mosquitoes.
Do you have to get rid of every single mosquito in order to get rid of the outbreak?
Well, ideally, yes. But fortunately, the dengue fever hasn't traveled very far to the other island. So we've got two main islands and two smaller islands. And the mosquito can only fly maybe 100 meters or 200 meters. But if the wind carries them, then they can be blown to the other island. And so it takes one or two people or maybe 10 to take it across to the other island. And then the mosquito will come and bite those people and then start spreading to other people.
So when it comes to people suffering from dengue fever, is it kind of the same story that people will have been used to from COVID, that's the young and the old are most at risk of severe illnesses?
That's true. We're finding in the people that have been diagnosed is less than 10 years old and more than 60 years old.
Do you think this outbreak might put people off visiting Samoa?
I hope not, because if you're planning to come to Samoa, it's just basic, sensible parameters. Make sure you don't get bitten by mosquito and bring enough repellent. And if you haven't, we got lots of repellent here. Make sure that you in your house or you wear a good protective clothing when you go out, because the mosquitoes bite in the evening, just before sundown or around that time, and early in the morning. And it shouldn't stop people from coming, because most of the dengue we have here are very mild symptoms.
That is Professor Satu Viali, the Vice-Chancellor of the Oceania University of Medicine. Thank you so much. Whawhatai.
Whawhatai.
Do you trust TikTok or not? That's what we asked you in our Big Stuff Instagram poll yesterday, on the back of our story about the US planning to ban the platform if the Chinese company that owns it didn't sell its American arm. So, turns out 93% of you are not fans, and just 7% reckon, yeah, it's all good. Oof, not a rousing endorsement on our social media trust barometer. Nevertheless, you can still find us on TikTok or Instagram. Search for NZ Stuff. And if you want to go old school, you can send us an email, newsable@stuff.co.nz. First New Zealand, then the galaxy. New Zealand-made peanut butter is heading into space. Yep, you heard that right. You might ask why it's not the normal place to find peanut butter, but this has all come about due to the cravings of a peanut butter-loving astronaut and involves Wellington's own nut butter maker, Fix and Fog. Here to tell us all about this rather curious tale is Stuff's Lyric Waiwiri Smith. Lyric, how did Fix and Fog get involved in supplying peanut butter to astronauts?
I think they were just as shocked as you and I are, because a few years ago, one of the NASA astronauts was gifted a jar of smoke and fire peanut butter by a Kiwi mate, and apparently he just totally fell in love. Eventually, Fix and Fog started stocking in the US, so he got more butters, and then he said to NASA, I need this at the International Space Station. Make it happen. And so NASA reached out to Fix and Fog and they said, why not?
Amazing. For what it's worth, if I was at the International Space Station, I would also insist that Fix and Fog be there. What do they have to do to make it suitable? I mean, presumably you don't just grab a jar off the shelf, hand it to NASA and say, hey, there you go.
Well, no, you can't. Fix and Fog co-founder Roman Jewell, first, he just sent them a bunch of jars of Fix and Fog, and then NASA was like, well, actually, you know, you can't have glass jars in space because they're pretty heavy and they can break. So then the challenge was to create a zero-gravity peanut butter. So a peanut butter that can spread without... You know, I'm not a scientist, but the people who worked on this are, and they managed to come up with this pouch that the peanut butter goes in with quite a wide nozzle, so the astronauts can either suck out the peanut butter or they can spread it onto low-crumb space bread.
Wow. And so that zero gravity in space, that requires a very specific peanut butter solution.
Yeah, because you can't just whip open the jar and then the peanut will go everywhere, and it's crazy. It's I can't even imagine how the low crumb space spread works either, but definitely a few months of work went into making it suitable for consumption in zero gravity.
Yeah, 100%. So tell me, is this a once-off for the space station to cater to one person's peanut butter tastes, or do Fix and Fog now have this contract to supply, given they have now worked out how to handle those space conditions?
Well, they're hoping that they can become a fixture on the International Space Station. I don't think they have a contract with NASA yet, but what they did sort of realise is that because things in food in space loses its flavour, so their smoke and fire peanut butter in particular had enough kick that it was flavourful enough in space, and I think that was a point of difference for the astronauts, and I think that's what managed to convince NASA as well. Definitely, I feel like they're hoping that they can become a regular in the cupboards there, but who knows?
Fix and Fog on the menu in space. It'd be pretty cool, I'd say, if you're out there in the International Space Station, someone goes, hey, you want some peanut butter? And suddenly it's a New Zealand-based brand.
Oh, and it's not even just the peanut butter. They've got their almond butter and cashew butter up there. So they've got selection.
Incredible. I've been dabbling in the cashew butter, but it is awfully expensive. Lyric Wawerty-Smith, thank you so much for joining us.
All good. My pleasure.
Kia ora, I'm Adam Blair. I played the great game of rugby league for the Storm, Tigers, Broncos and the Mighty Warriors.
And I'm Goran Paladin, sports presenter and rugby league fanatic.
I won a World Cup too. I played 51 tests for New Zealand.
Yeah, he's a national treasure, people. Come on. Blairy and I, we're joining forces for a brand new rugby league podcast called League of Our Own.
Each week we talk Kiwis across the NRL and of course everything Waz.
All the big names, the big stories.
And some of my own stories too.
Well, if we can make them fit.
We'll make time.
Okay. League of Our Own with Blairy and Goran. Proudly brought to you by Snap Rentals.
You can listen through stuff.co.nz or wherever you get your podcast.
Mate, your stories are way too long, eh?
Nah, we've got to take them on a journey.
Oh, the journey. Yeah, of course.
Now, if you think you're a Harry Potter super fan, you might want to think again. That's because 44-year-old Victoria McLean has been named Britain's biggest collector. More than 9,000 items and a collection worth £250,000. For those quickly doing the maths at home, that's almost £530,000 New Zealand dollars. It's taken her 20 years to put it all together and first began after she read The Philosopher's Stone. In fact, she became so enamoured with the Harry Potter series that she called her youngest son, you guessed it, Harry. And she told the BBC she wears a uniform to work, so puts on her Harry Potter socks underneath so no one can see them. She sure is putting her money where her mouth is, not least with her favourite item of the collection, which is a cabinet containing a handmade 24-carat gold leaf miniature replica of Dumbledore's office worth an estimated £35,000. I mean, look, I don't mind a bit of Harry Potter, but this is next level. Anyway, that's Newsable for today. I'm Aaron Darman. Kia pai te ra.
If you like this podcast, please support our work. Visit stuff.co.nz/support.
If you don't have time to read the in-depth stories or you just prefer to listen instead, the Long Read from Stuff is the podcast for you. Each week we showcase one of our excellent pieces of journalism, telling important or entertaining stories from the world of crime, sport, history, culture and more. You also get to hear from the journalists themselves about how they uncovered the story and how it came to life. So for your weekly dose of long-form journalism, beautifully read, subscribe to the Long Read from Stuff wherever you get your podcasts.